Just a reminder, today's conference is being recorded.
Good day, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the NTRA Road to the Triple Crown 2016 conference call.
Is this something getting louder in here?
At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. Following the presentation, we will conduct a question-and-answer session. At that time, participants are asked to press star 1 to register for a question. As a reminder, this conference is being recorded. It is now my pleasure to introduce your host, Mr. Jim Mulvihill. Please go ahead, Mr. Mulvihill.
All right. Thank you, Nick, and welcome everybody to our first official Road to the Triple Crown teleconference of the spring. We're now 46 days away from the first Saturday in May, and the stakes on the road to the Kentucky Derby continue to rise. Over the next four Saturdays, we've got 9 more stakes that offer points towards a berth in the Kentucky Derby starting gate, including 7 final preps that are worth 170 points each. The first two of those are this weekend, the UAE Derby at Maidan and the TwinSpires.com Louisiana Derby at Fairgrounds. Of course, Saturday is also the world's richest race, the $10 million Dubai World Cup. And even though this call here is technically a Road to the Derby call, we thought we could offer everyone a chance to talk to Art Sherman if he was willing to join us. Unfortunately, he was. California Chrome has been in Dubai for a couple months now preparing for that race, and we'll hear more about his preparations from Art in just a bit. But first, to kick off this call, we're delighted to be joined by Tom Amos, trainer of the Louisiana Derby morning line favorite, Mo Tom. Amos has won 11 training titles at Fairgrounds. That's his hometown track, and he's won more than 1,000 races there, second only to Jack Van Berg. Now, Mo Tom has 22 Road to the Derby points so far, including 10 from winning January's LeCompte and another 10 from his hard luck third in last month's Risen Star, which we're going to talk more about in just a moment. But now let's welcome in Tom Amos. Tom, it's Jim Mulvihill in Lexington. Thanks for joining us.
Always good to hear your voice, Jim. Listen, I'm having lunch at the Napoleon House down in the French Quarter, and it's a little loud. Can you hear me clearly?
We can hear you clearly, and we're all very jealous to hear of your lunch. That's a great place to be eating. So we'll try and not keep you for too long because I don't want your food to get cold. But
take your time.
But there's a lot to talk about with this horse. You know, a lot of storylines coming together here for the Louisiana Derby. But before we get to some of those that are in the background, maybe we can just talk about the last race, the Risen Star. You had kind of a tough trip, so maybe you can just describe that trip for us and also maybe tell us what you think might have happened with a clean trip in the Risen Star.
Sure. Well, you know, first we'll talk about what happened factually, and then I guess we can speculate after that. But, you know, it was a race that set up well for Mo Tom. There was good speed in the race, and as the race started to develop, and Tom kept his typical kind of laid-back run, so he was well back in the race. The most important thing to me was seeing how quickly the race was running up front. In other words, would it set up for someone to close? And I liked what I saw after the opening half mile. The advantage of that was the pace setter that day and the horse that's going to run again in the Louisiana Derby was breaking from the extreme outside. So to set the pace on this particular race, he was going to have to get in front of the entire field. And to do that meant using a lot of horse, and we got that in our favor. Tom started to make his run at about the 3/8 pole with 3/8 of a mile left in the race. And we had a decision to make turning for home. We could go inside or we could go outside, and Corey Lannery, our rider, decided to make the decision to go inside, and as we did so, one of the horses that was near the front at the beginning of the race that was stopping in the race unexpectedly decided to drift down towards the rail and impeded us, and we actually made contact with that horse, and we suffered a little minor cut in the leg from that, but nothing other than a superficial cut, and it broke our momentum. At that point, I knew the race was probably lost, but we got him restarted again, and he made a very furious finish.
And then if you would, maybe, you know, what do you suppose happens if he gets a clean trip and it isn't stopped like that?
Well, you know, I'm biased. I'm Tom's trainer, and I think the world of him. But even to the unbiased observer, I think most people would agree that it would have been a race that Tom would have won.
And the morning line odds maker seems right, of course. And the morning line odds maker seems to agree. You are favored in this race, despite the fact that the winner Gunrunner is also in this field. Tom, I'm gonna take a break for a second and turn it over to Nick, the operator, to see what the media might have for you.
Sure.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, if you would like to ask a question, please press star 1 on your touchtone phone. Again, if you would like to ask a question, please press star 1 on your touchtone phone. Our first question comes from the line of Danny Brewer at ForceRacingScoop.com. Please go ahead.
Tom, how are we doing today?
I'm doing good, Danny.
The Risen Star, did you find out a little bit of something about Motom in this race as far as what he's got inside, you know, as far as determination and stuff? Because he did face a lot of challenges.
Yes, that's a good question. And the answer to that is yes. You know, I think the most important thing to recognize about not only the Risen Star, but something I've seen in his other races, which may not be evident to the naked eye, but certainly was the Risen Star, is this is a very determined horse. So he's not just a horse that's going to pick up the pieces at the end of the race. This is a horse that has a devastating quarter of a mile kick. Unfortunately, it wasn't on full display that day, but I'm certainly hoping that we'll get the opportunity to show it on Saturday and the rest of the world can see what I already know.
Corey Lannery, what's your thoughts on him? He's doggone good at Churchill Downs. What do you think about Corey?
Well, I think we're lucky to have him. He is one of the top riders in the country, and he is the top rider at Churchill Downs meet after meet. Corey's got some choices to make. He rides some other Derby potential horses, but he is our first choice. So, literally, it's truly up to Corey to decide whether he wants to stay with Motom. We want to have him all the way through the summer, whatever our races might be.
Last one for me, your Louisiana boy. It's the Louisiana Derby. Where is that on the rankings for you as far as trying to get this race?
Well, it's at the top. You know, my parents are still alive in their 90s, but they're still alive. All my brothers live down here, and I have 5 brothers. You know, look, the horse is owned by the Saints owner, Tom Benson, and his wife, Gail. I mean, just so many things that would make this special. And I know that based on these other 2 races here that we've had at the fairgrounds, I know that I'm going to be, you know, that Tom is going to be the crowd favorite. They're coming out to support the Bensons, and they're coming out to support their horse. So I really don't want to let anybody down.
Well, you keep him rolling, and I'm sure everything will be just great. I appreciate your time, and I certainly wish you the best of luck.
Thank you.
Our next question comes from the line of Ron Flatter at RSN Australia. Please go ahead.
Hi, Tom. First question would be the fact that the speed in the race from the last race is starting right next to you in this race. What kind of advantage do you think that holds?
Well, it may be a disadvantage because when you review the race, I'm not sure how much speed is in this race. But the speed breaking inside of me means that that horse is not going to have to be used as much to make the front end. And by that, I mean he's not going to have to get in front of everybody and cross over as he did last time from that extreme outside post. So I guess to take that question a little deeper, I certainly have a concern as to how fast they're going to run early in this race.
Greenpoint Crusader comes in, hasn't raced in a couple months. How do you look at him having an impact on the way the race is run?
Well, you mentioned post positions, and he's down towards the rail as well. And I think that Johnny Velasquez, his rider, senses that there's probably not going to be a lot of pace in there, and I think he is going to be a horse that's going to prompt the pace to some extent. So I'm counting on that. We'll see what happens.
You mentioned the Bensons, too. Do you hear a lot from Mrs. Benson? Is she a hands-on owner to the extent that maybe you can somehow relate to the Saints and the Pelicans in some way?
She's absolutely a hands-on owner. I speak to her once a week, either through email or directly, every Monday, update on the horse, what his plans are for the week in terms of training. You know, if I have any thoughts on how the race is coming up, strategies for the race, all those things are discussed. And she comes and visits him, too. So, you know, Tom is a huge Peppermint fan, and and Gail has been known to smuggle peppermints into the barn on all occasions. Not that we don't have plenty on hand, but she likes to bring her own.
I trust you have something other than peppermint that you're eating now, and I'll let you get back to that. Thanks, Tom.
I haven't started eating that. I didn't mean to make this brief, but I'm willing to take any questions.
Fair enough.
Our next question comes from the line of Debbie Arrington at the Sacramento Bee. Please go ahead.
Hi, Tom. Thanks a lot for coming on today. How did Mo Tom get his name other than I'm assuming the Mo is from Uncle Mo, but are you the Tom?
No, I'm not. Debbie, actually, the Tom is Tom Benson, his owner, co-owner. And I think because they were naming horses when they got to this Uncle Mo coat, they were going through names, and Gail said, who wouldn't want more Tom? And they decided to make it a little bit of a slang and call it Mo Tom. So it's named after Mr. Benson.
Very good. And, you know, this J.B. Crop comes after a Triple Crown year, you know, after such a long wait. How do you, you know, rate this this crop? And back in the 70s, we had a bunch of Triple Crowns strung together. You know, do you see a horse coming out of this group that might fit that bill, including yours?
Well, you know, here it is. It's still March, and the Derby is, as Jim alluded to, 40-something days away. Mm-hmm. It's way too early to determine what this crop is or isn't. Certainly, the horse down in Florida, Mohegan, is a brilliant horse. But we're going through that process of where the races get longer in distance. So, you know, taking Louisiana Derby, for example, this will be the furthest Mo Tom's ever run, a mile and an eighth. And the Derby is another 220 yards, a mile and a quarter. So I think that what these horses do at these longer races is going to say a lot about what the crop is in terms of the classic distances. I'm not ready to anoint anybody. Yeah. As the next Triple Crown winner.
Very good. Great. Best of luck.
Thank you.
Our next question comes from the line of Catherine Terrell at the New Orleans Times-Picayune. Please go ahead.
Hey, Tom. You've mentioned more than once, including today, just how much this race would mean to you to win. But has that desire increased the last few years since you've had so many live shots to win and you've gotten so close?
So what are you saying? Is my time running out? You know,
well,
I don't know.
I meant that in your first few years, you didn't have as many, and now it's kind of like the last few years, I guess it's become more of a regular occurrence, and has your perspective on it changed at all?
Yeah. You know, I think I have a much more mature perspective than I did, say, you know, 15 years ago maybe 20 years ago when I ran Fly Cry, who was favored at this race. He won all the preps leading into the Louisiana Derby, and, you know, I just assumed wrongly that one of these races would have my name on it. And as time has gone on since then, and I've had a training career rather than just starting out, I recognize how difficult it is to win these kind of races. And so I have a greater appreciation and respect for these kind of races like the Louisiana Derby, and I'm still hopeful once I have my name on it.
Thanks. Enjoy your meal today.
Thank you.
Our next question comes from the line of Brian Zips at Horse Racing Nation. Please go ahead.
Hey, Tom. How are you doing?
Good. Good. Thank you.
Tom, I have two quick questions for you. First off, being by Uncle Mo, hot young sire, we don't know possibly the distance capabilities of his sons and daughters. From what you've seen so far, do you have any worries or any great feelings about Uncle Mo stretching forward to distances like 10 furlongs?
Well, you know, that's a really fair question, right? I mean, as a sire, Uncle Mo wasn't able to do it on the racetrack. And I'm just going to tell you a funny story. Back then, we were doing the works show for TBG, and I was one of the analysts, and we were grading works. We were grading Uncle Mo either for the Breeders' Cup or the Derby. I can't remember what time of year it was. But it was one of the first works we did, and I gave him a grade of an F. And Todd Shrupp was hosting the show, and he turned to me and he goes, well, that didn't take long. And as it turned out, Mike Rapoli came on the show about three segments later, and he gave my performance as a analyst, he gave me an F. So anyhow, that was Uncle Mo. Mo Tom gets an A, and Uncle Mo gets an A as far as whether he can get a distance or not. I think Uncle Mo is going to be one of those sires that we're going to talk about, like we talk about Stormcat, like we talk about Tappet. I really think he's brilliant. And this is his first season of three-year-olds, and I think they're going to excel. And that's a question we're going to put to bed after the first Saturday in May.
Great. I'd like to see it happen. Tom, lastly, Uncle Mo, Mo Tom runs his race on Saturday in the Louisiana Derby. Who's the horse running second to him?
Chase, I hope you're right. I hope we win. Who's the horse running second to him? I actually think the locals are legitimate horses. I think Gun Runner is very legitimate. And I think Forever Mo is very legitimate as well. So if I was going to make an exacta box, I think I'd stick with the locals.
Fair enough. Good luck on Saturday, Tom. Thanks.
Thank you very much.
Our next question comes from the line of Art Wilson at the Los Angeles Newspaper Group. Please go ahead.
Yeah, Tom, kind of a follow-up and a question asked a little bit ago. How many of the Derby preps from around the country have you seen? And I'm kind of curious to get your opinion on, you mentioned Moy Heyman, but who were some of the other top three-year-olds that kind of caught your eye and maybe impressed you?
Yeah. So I've watched a number of them, and I thought the most brilliant performance outside of the horse you just mentioned has to be most recently in Arkansas, and that's Bob Baffert's Cupid. You know, people have talked about him in some way or form making an easy lead in that race. I didn't see that race at all like that. I mean, anybody that was close to him early, as he was the pace setter, you know, they all backed up in the race, played the closers except for him, and he was able to fight them all off. I thought his race was very, very good.
What is, even though there are a lot of people think highly of him, Nyquist, even though he's undefeated, Breeders' Cup Juvenile Champion, has a lot of detractors. Well, what is your opinion of Nyquist?
He's a great horse. I really, going into the Breeders' Cup Juvenile, I didn't think he was going to get the distance based on his style of running. But he not only got it, he dominated the group. Look, he's been pretty quiet in his three-year-old year, so he's not being talked about. The only race he's run in, I believe, is the one-turn race out at Santa Anita. I'm going off memory there. But so, you know, he hadn't made a lot of noise, but he made noise in that race, and I think he's going to make some noise when he runs in the Florida Derby, too.
Okay, thanks. Best of luck this weekend.
Thank you.
Our next question comes from the line of Tom Gisha at the South Florida Sun Sentinel. Please go ahead.
Yeah, Tom, I was going to ask the question about Uncle Mo passing on any stamina, so that's been answered. So I'll take another question. What do you think of the decision for Nyquist to come here and take on Mohamed in the both horses' final preps? Is that something that you would do? Or, I mean, generally the rule is you try and get the easiest possible final race before the Derby into your horse.
Right. Well, when I first saw that he was going to Florida to run that race, I thought I didn't understand it. But now that I understand there's a $1 million bonus on the line for him, should he win it, it makes a lot more sense. I'm not a believer that your last prep for the Derby should be the easiest race. I'm a believer that competition toughens your horse and makes him better for the next start. The decision to go there, my only worry would be the travel, you know, that you're going to do between now and the Kentucky Derby with a horse like that who's based in California. But Doug O'Neill is a proven trainer, both, you know, on a day-to-day basis and in the Triple Crown. So he knows what he's doing, and I wouldn't have any fear based on that.
Is it something you would do?
You know, I've never trained in California, and you're shipping across the country. I don't know how all that works, so it's an unfair question. I'm not trying to avoid the question. I just don't have any experience with it, so I don't know the answer to that.
Okay. Well, I mean, as much as the ship and everything else, you're coming now to take on the horse most people think is the toughest horse outside your horse for sure. You don't think it could be a gut-wrenching race for both of them?
Well, again, I mean, you asked me pertaining to that, did I think that the last race should be your easiest for the Kentucky Derby? I don't agree with that. So Okay. Based on that aspect of the question, I wouldn't be concerned with that.
Okay, one final thing. Why'd you give Uncle Mo an F for his workout?
I didn't think he traveled all that great leading into the race, you know. So it had nothing to do with distance capabilities or not. But, look, my job back then was to talk to the bettors. You know, my job was to examine her work and let them know whether I thought that's a horse they should keep on their ticket and use in their races. I don't know if you're familiar with that show or not, but that was my role. That was my role. So so that's why I thought he was a throwout, you know.
Okay, very good. Thank you very much.
Sure.
There are no further questions at this time. Please continue.
All right, Tom, just one quick follow-up before we let you get back to your lunch. I'm remembering a couple years ago when the Bensons decided to get back into buying horses, and I believe the story was that they spread some money around between you and a few of the other New Orleans trainers. Can you just talk about how Motom was acquired and Mr. Benson getting back into the game?
Sure. So your memory serves you correctly. You know, they wanted to use New Orleans kind of born and raised guys, and the three they chose were Dallas Stewart, Al Stahl, and myself. The wonderful thing about going to the sale, the yearling sale at Keeneland, the three of us did, and picking out horses for them was there were no constraints. Buy whatever you want. Here's the limit on what we're going to spend. And you know, you guys handle the horses from the moment the hammer drops and we get them till we get to see them run. So I didn't have to answer to anyone. I wasn't calling and saying, what about this one? I like him because of this reason or that reason. I had no constraints, and that was a pleasure to go in there and just do what I thought was best. And literally, once the hammer dropped on my Uncle Mo Cole, have him at the farm I wanted him to get broken at within a day and a half, and then to be able to follow him into his training until he came into the barn. So you don't get to do that very often. Typically, with owners, they're involved in some shape or form. There's nothing wrong with that. But I certainly enjoyed getting to do it strictly my way and not having to worry about anyone looking over my shoulder.
And you all did pretty well. I mean, Dallas's horse in the Louisiana Derby is also one of those that came out of that arrangement, correct?
Oh, yeah. That's exactly right. And, you know, when you look at it, you're buying yearlings. There are going to be some successes and failures. But, I mean, if it were all to end today and they were going to sell these horses tomorrow with what they have in the barn, they would sell them for more than what they bought them for. And that's quite an achievement when you're going to the yearling sales.
Terrific. Well, Tom, thank you so much for your time today, and good luck in the Louisiana Derby on Saturday.
Thanks, Jim. Pleasure, really.
All right, Tom, enjoy the lunch. Always good talking to you, man.
Bye-bye.
All right, that's Tom Amos, trainer of Louisiana Derby favorite Motom. But now we're going to turn our attention away from the Derby preps for a few minutes, and we're going to go to the United Arab Emirates, where 2014 Derby and Preakness winner California Chrome has been preparing for the Dubai World Cup. We have trainer Art Sherman on the line, and let's get right to him. Art, are you there?
Yes, I am. It's probably afternoon in your part of town, isn't it?
It is indeed. It's about 1:30 here in Lexington. Thank you so much for joining us. We're all so excited to see California Chrome taking another shot at the Dubai World Cup. You only got in town yesterday, correct?
True.
All right. So could you just share with us your impressions of California Chrome after you've gotten to watch him train with your own eyes over there?
Oh, sure. I got up about 2 o'clock in the morning. Couldn't sleep.
Oh, my.
You know, the time change is about 12 hours different. So I showered and shaved and went over to the barn, and I got to see him before anybody was actually, except for the groom, was just getting there when I was there. You know, they all live close by to the barn, and it's quite a setup here in Dubai, and they've got great, great facilities for the grooms and everybody that is involved. And it was kind of real. You know, I got up to the barn and I yelled at him. I said, "Hey, Chrome, what are you doing?" And he kind of looked at me and started making that little noise that he does, and I, because he knew that I always fed him cookies, so I gave him the two cookies, and I sat next to him, and I said, either I'm getting smaller or he's getting bigger, you know. So it was, you know, I haven't seen him in a little over a month, so it they seem like they change all the time, you know.
And I read that you thought that maybe
he looked fantastic.
Yeah, and I even read a quote where you thought he might be five lengths better than he was this time last year.
Oh, I might be getting a little bit, you know, showing a little pride in my horse, you know. But I'll tell you, I watched him grow into the individual he is, and since he's been a two-year-old and now he's five, you know, and I said, wow, what a big change. He looks just absolutely terrific and training great. I can't really tell you, you know, my son did a terrific job of being here mm-hmm. for a couple of months prior to that, and his groom and the exercise board, they've done a terrific job with him. You know, I couldn't have done it without him. I'll tell you, they deserve a lot of credit.
Well, and you mentioned Alan and going there 2 months ago with Chrome, so can you just talk about the decision to send him so far in advance this year for this race and you know, whether what you're describing are the benefits of that decision?
Well, you know, after being there and running second, I thought it had really been beneficial for him to have a race over the course. You know, it was the first time that they had a new dirt track there, and it was a little different, a little bit cuppy, a little bit loose. And now the track is really well maintained, and it looks really good. It rained, in fact, all this morning. So this is my first time I ever seen it rain in Dubai. I didn't realize they had that much rain, but it rained till about 11 o'clock in the morning, and then it cleared up. And the track's in great shape, I can tell you that. He galloped this morning and looked absolutely great.
Very good. Well, Art, I'm going to check back with the operator, Nick, and he's going to see if any of the other media on this call have questions for you.
Sure. Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, as a reminder, if you would like to ask a question, please press star 1 on your touch-tone phone. Again, if you'd like to ask a question, please press star 1. Our first question comes from the line of Ron Flatter at RSN Australia. Please go ahead.
Hi, Art. I want to go a little further into the decision to go over there. And last year, there was so much criticism of the whole program sending him over there. You had some yourself. Why is this year different?
Well, you know, we've got a whole new ownership plan, and everybody seems to be on the right plan of doing things, you know, like it should be done. And I really think we did the right thing by coming over here, since I needed to get another prep into him. You know, I only had one other race this year after having 9 months off, you know, and of course he won that race at Santa Anita, but he sure needed to be tighter than he was going into that race. And the mile and a quarter I got underneath him a month ago was the real tightener. You know, he looked absolutely beautiful. And when under wraps, you know, Victor told me, he said he had plenty of horses left. And carrying 132 pounds, you know, I understand it wasn't your stellar field that he ran against, but I was so impressed the way he did it, you know. And I think now with that race under his belt coming into this Dubai World Cup, he's going to show you something when he runs.
A little further on the new ownership with TaylorMade being involved, what are they bringing to the table that you didn't get from the Coburn-Martin partnership?
Well, so you've got to realize that, you know, it was a new endeavor for them, too. You know what I mean? It's, first horse you ever owned turns out to be California Chrome, you know, first horse you ever bred. And it was kind of overwhelming, and sometimes, you know, you might get a little bit carried away, but I'll tell you, now they're on the right track, and they've got people around them that are real horsemen and looking out for everybody, and the atmosphere is so much easier for me to being a trainer, you know, and knowing we got horsemen behind us and that have been lifelong horsemen, you know, it's a little bit different atmosphere for me.
And lastly, have you ever seen a horse grow to a five-year-old as much as this one has? Or how do you look at his growth compared to other horses you've had at age five?
Well, it's just a pleasure to see him. I never thought it. I thought, like, after last year he'd go to the breeding farm and I wouldn't see him again, you know what I mean? But after bringing him back and training and looking at him, Taylor May did such a wonderful job putting the weight. You know, he lost so much weight, but he put on like 160 pounds at the farm. So you know that he was kind of undernourished a little bit when he come from England. It was just hard on him. You know, he wasn't up to himself and just needed to have a little R&R. You know, the horse never really had much opportunity to be turned out.
Yeah. English cooking.
But what a difference. Yeah,
a lot of difference. All right. Thanks, Art. Good luck to you Saturday.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
Our next question comes from the line of Danny Brewer at ForestRacingScoop.com. Please go ahead.
Artie, my boy, how you doing?
Oh, great. Great.
Hey, talk for just a second about the perseverance and the faith and some of those things that have went into this California Chrome story, you know, pinnacle at three, injury at four, and now he like, according to you, he looks great, and he's maybe going back to that pinnacle again. What about all that stuff?
Well, I'll tell you, unless you've been around the horse and you see, you know, he's such a super horse to train, you know, he does everything just right, and he's a pleasure to be around, and you know, I look at him and watch him on the track, and he stands there and just watches everybody train for about 10 minutes and just stares at him and goes along and does his job, you know, and comes back. He rolls in the big sand pit we have by the barn, and he just looks so terrific that, you know, I just look at him and I say, wow, and I watch him work and work prior to this race, even 59 and change, and galloped out in 12 and 2. And the way he does it, you know, he looks like he's going in 14. If you were had your watch and say, wow, he went in 12 and 2, you know, he just drives now looking good. And, you know, he's a picture of health. And like I said, I've never seen him in this perfect conditioning right now for him. He looks just absolutely wonderful.
Do you think that his happiness just exudes and bleeds off into the rest of the whole team? And because obviously you guys seem like you're really hitting on all cylinders right now.
Well, I just think it's a team effort. You know, everybody involved now. My son's done a terrific job of, you know, he's been here now going over 2 months, and the groom, and, you know, Rose had him ever since he's been a baby. And, you know, the horse just loves everybody that's attached to him, you know. He just seems to blossom when they're around, you know. You have to be there to see it, you know. You think, wow, he looks part human, you know. He knows everybody that comes around and nickers at him. And, you know, you mention his name, he'll look at you, you know. And it's awesome. It's an awesome experience for me, too.
Artie, I certainly wish you folks the best of luck. All right, thanks a lot, man.
You bet. Thank you.
Our next question comes from the line of Art Wilson at the Los Angeles Newspaper Group. Please go ahead.
Hey, Art.
How you doing?
Pretty good, thanks. Hey, can you kind of pinpoint, other than the fact that the prep race this year over the track might be a big benefit for him, but what kind of the difference between this year and last year in the horse? What makes you more confident this year that he can get the job done?
Well, if you see the individual and you see, you know, all the campaign for the Triple Crown and running, you know, some tough races, and he was just tired. He was a tired horse last year, you know, and I just think the R&R and the 3 to 4 months off on the farm and let him have that good old Kentucky bluegrass. And you know what I mean? He just turned into an individual that you cannot believe. You know, he just grew up, you know, and it makes you think, wow, You know, if you guys saw him as a 3-year-old, you wouldn't recognize him now. He's a lot of horse.
And if you say he was a tired horse last year, it kind of makes then his second place effort last year in the World Cup even more impressive.
Well, I think so, you know. And I just think, you know, not making any excuses, he might get outrun. There's a lot of good horses in this race. You know, I just wouldn't want to trade places with anybody else in the race, I can tell you that.
And my last question, can you just kind of summarize what this horse has meant to you personally and how he's changed your life?
Well, he's once in a lifetime for me. You know, I've never been around. I was come up in an era with swaps and them kind of horses that were great horses and good runners. But to have one to train like him is once in a lifetime, you know, at my age now. And I look back all the years that you've trained horses. And I'll tell you, it's quite an accomplishment for the horse and quite an accomplishment for me and my family. You know, it's meant so much to us. We've had a lot of great experiences.
Okay. Good luck on Saturday, Art.
Thank you.
Our next question comes from the line of Debbie Arrington at Sacramento Bee. Please go ahead.
Hi, Art. I wish I was there.
Hi, Debbie. How you doing?
Oh, fine.
I know.
Fine.
I miss all my favorites.
I know. Well, you know, we're there in spirit, and we're on the phone with you, so that's the second best thing. You know, two things really struck me about, you know, this whole thing with Crone running at age 5. He carried 132 pounds in his prep race. How would trainers here in California, you know, or anywhere else in the U.S., react to having a prep race with 132 pounds?
Well, you know, I remember the days that Kelso and all them big horses used to carry 32 and 36.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I look back now and all his training, you know, you look at the exercise rider, weighs probably 35, the saddle bait probably 15 to 20 pounds. So he's carrying every day about 150-something pounds when he trains and breathes, you know. And I really think it's a benefit for him. But in our era now that you hardly ever see 32, I had a laugh when I put this – we helped put the saddle on when he ran in the prep race here a month ago, and I haven't put a lead pad on a horse, and I can't tell you when. It was kind of, I had a laugh. I said, you guys, I want to tell you, this saddle's heavy. Because Victor does about 112 pounds, so you can see there's 20-something pounds of lead in there, you know. But it was great, you know. It was fun, you know. I forgot almost how to put a lead pad on. I'm glad my son was there to adjust everything. I'd have never been able to do it.
Well, and the other thing is that, you know, here is a Kentucky Derby winner, you know, that's running at age 5 and competing, you know, at the top of the game, you know, at age 5. And what do you think that means to the sport?
Well, you know, I'll just tell you about the send-off. I was leaving the day before. All the ladies, the Cromies, they call themselves, came over with box of donuts, flowers, a big party at the barn. And I said, wow, you know, what a fanfare this horse has. And Los Alamitos is going to have a big breakfast that morning and have everybody over to watch the race. And they expect a pretty good crowd. You know, he's kind of California's favorite, you know what I mean? He's got a fanfare like I've never seen a horse. You know, I've been around for a long time, and I know American Pharoah had a great following, but I think the Cromies are different. You know, it's a different group of people. You know what I mean? And it's like their hero. You know, and I'm just so satisfied with the way everything is going.
And you're right. The Cromies are you know, Pharoah had a lot of fans, but you know he peaked and then he, you know, he's gone. And the Cromies, you know, they've been around, well, pretty much since the beginning of his 3-year-old season.
True, and he had quite a fanfare. You know, it was just when I run at Santa Anita this winter, and I said, well, I just wonder if the people will be there. why they were just mobbed down there and padding, padding, and signs all over and yelling, chanting his name, Chrome, Chrome. And I said, wow, it really made me feel good, you know, saying, he's back.
Yeah. And one last question. How many cookies did you guys bring over for Chrome?
Oh, God, we got 75 pounds. He said for this thing, I can tell you that. We got this pasture's cookies are doing really good, you know. So everybody is on the right track there, I can tell you that. He's a cookie monger, I tell you that.
Very good. Well, best of luck, and hope to see you in the winner's circle.
Oh, I appreciate that. Thank you.
Ladies and gentlemen, as a reminder, if you'd like to ask a question, please press star 1 on your touch-tone phone. Please press star 1 if you'd like to ask a question. There are no further questions at this time. Please continue.
All right, Art, I'm just going to ask you one follow-up, and then we'll let you go. I just want to talk more about California Chrome coming back to race this season. You said that when he went to the farm, you thought you might not see him again. With all that he's accomplished, why do you figure he is still racing?
Well, I think they did the right thing. You know, there's a bunch of new people with the breeding end of it, and they can get in and buy shares and still have a horse running that can make him some money. It was really a great idea. Whoever thought about it, it made a lot of sense. You know, he kind of went out to the farm, you know, almost 100% sound. He had a few issues with his feet and just needed some time off, you know, and to regenerate all his little wars of running. And it made such a big difference, you know, and it made a lot of sense, you know, for the future. And you got to realize, you know, if he wins this race, it would be the all-time winningest thoroughbred ever, you know, for, you know, past Curlin's record. And got it, you know, coming to the breeding shed, and he's still got the Pacific Classic to look forward to, and then the Breeders' Cup, you know, I just think it is really great for the sport to keep. You know, we don't have the older horses. The minute they start doing good, they're gone, you know, and it gives everybody a chance. And people, you know, even here in Dubai when he won the other day, when he come back to the winner's circle, he got a standing ovation, and I haven't seen that for a long time. And don't forget, they don't bet here, you know, no mutual betting, and it's no monetary investment, but they just love the horse, and it made me feel really good.
Oh, man. And so, but among the owners then, do you get the sense that there's maybe still something left to prove despite everything that he's already done? And I don't know if that might be because of his modest pedigree and a speculation about his stud value and such, but do you get the sense that they still think that they have to prove California Chrome's ability to some of the skeptics?
Well, I would do that. You know, he still has a lot to prove as far as being the real McCoy. You know, he's got a great following, and he's win a lot of grade ones. But, you know, to win a race like the World Cup, when all the horses from all over the world, all the best horses, Frosted and Keen Eyes, and I watch him train every morning over here when I'm here, and all the Japanese and Australians, you know, it's quite an accomplishment when you're going to have 12 horses in the field and to see who's the best, you know, and that proves something, you know. It's, hey, you're not all mouth. We got to run, you know what I mean? Let's do it. Let's get it on.
Well, it is great for the fans, and we cannot wait to see him compete on Saturday. Art, I know it's late. We're going to let you try to get some sleep, but I thank you for joining us this morning or this evening over there, and best of luck to you on Saturday.
I appreciate that. Thank you.
All right. Thanks so much. That's Art Sherman, trainer of California Chrome, talking about Saturday's Dubai World Cup, and hopefully we'll have other chances to talk to Art about California Chrome as the year goes on. But now we're going to turn our attention back to Fairgrounds. They've got that incredible Louisiana Derby Day card, and our final guest today is David Fisk. He's the longtime racing manager for Windchill Thoroughbreds. They own the Risen Star winner Gunrunner, who's the second choice on the Louisiana Derby morning line. They own him in partnership with Three Chimneys Farm. And they've also got Adore, a promising filly making her stakes debut in the Fairgrounds Oaks. Both of those three-year-olds are under the care of Steve Asmussen, whose family has a long history of success with the Windchill family. And together they've campaigned several Grade 1 winners and a champion in Untappable, who's at Oaklawn, preparing for another try at the Apple Blossom, the race she won last year. That's coming up in a few weeks. And we should also mention that David's the man responsible for purchasing Tappet. Although the 2 3-year-olds we're talking about today are not by North America's leading stallion, who sired so many talented horses for Ron Windchill and the Windchill family. But that is definitely worth noting considering Tappet's influence on thoroughbred racing today. David Fisk, it's Jim Mulvihill of the NTRA. Thanks for joining us.
Well, thank you. After that introduction, I don't know that there's really that much I can add.
Oh, I don't believe that. We've got a lot to uncover about these three-year-olds. Let's talk Gunrunner first. You know, based on his two-year-old campaign, it looks like you knew you had a good horse. We know that because you started his campaign in a Grade 2 Derby prep. So can you just talk about the expectations for Gunrunner coming into his three-year-old season and how you and Steve decided to get him going this year?
Well, we thought after his races as a two-year-old that he had a lot of promise, and he trained very well over the winter, and we had some other options, places to start him, but Steve thought he could get him up to, a good effort in the Risen Star, and, you know, that's what we got. So we were pretty pleased with that.
Yeah, I would have to say so. I mean, you know, with that being his three-year-old debut, were you actually expecting a win? Or you know, Steve sounds like his aim was for a good effort, but to get the win, how did that change your opinion of his prospects?
Well, he'd been touting himself a little bit in his training, and Steve was, you know, very excited about running him. But as everybody knows, coming off a long layoff like he was coming off of, anything could happen, and we were just looking for a good effort that he could build on and move forward.
Well, and one would assume that off of the debut, there's still a lot of room for improvement there. Is that your sense? I'm sure that's your hope, but is that your impression based on what you've seen?
That is what we're hoping, and the way he has trained in between the Risen Star and the Derby on this coming Saturday, we think he's doing as well as he can do. I mean, he's been doing great. He fired off a bullet last week and had a little maintenance work yesterday and came out of that in great shape. So, I think he's slightly disadvantaged by his post position draw, but, you know, in the Risen Star, he worked his way over the fence, and he was kind of down on the inside, going down the backside, you know, kind of mid-pack. So, hopefully he can get a similar trip on Saturday.
Very good. Well, David, I want to turn it over to the media, see what questions they have for you. Nick, the operator, can take it away for us.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, as a reminder, if you'd like to ask a question, please press *1 on your touchtone phone at this time. Again, if you'd like to ask a question, please press *1. Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, as a reminder, if you'd like to ask a question, please press *1. *1 on your touchtone phone. Our first question comes from the line of Jonathan Lintner at the Courier Journal. Please go ahead.
Hi, thank you for taking the time to do this today. You kind of hinted that, you know, bringing Gunrunner back in a spot like the Risen Star, that did you get the sense that maybe he wasn't fully cranked in that race? I mean, what kind of scenario do you see him kind of folding into in this Louisiana Derby?
Well, I hope he wasn't fully cranked. most of the time horses will, make a forward move off of a start like that. He should be fitter for the Louisiana Derby. And like I said, he's been training well in between races. So, he's going to have to move forward if he's going to continue down the Triple Crown Trail. He's going to have to move forward and get faster. So, I think we're in as good a spot as we can be on Saturday, and we just hope it all works out.
A lot of conversation about Motom and the late run he had in the Risen Star. Is that worry you looking forward to Saturday?
They all kind of worry me. It's always a concern as, you know, who's in against you. I think Motom, well, he's the morning line favorite, so, you know, he's certainly a factor to contend with. I think we were probably getting a little bit tired in the Risen Star, close to the wire. Florent said he might have moved a little early with him, but he's such a tractable horse that Florent was able to put him wherever he wanted to. You know, if he wanted to move up a couple spots, he could, and then, you know, the horse would idle there for him and then move again. So he's very tactical, and you know, hopefully he's more fit, and the extra 16th of a mile isn't going to be a factor for him. It is a long stretch at Fairgrounds, though, so yeah, we'll just have to see what happens.
Thank you.
Our next question comes from the line of Danny Brewer at horseracingscoop.com. Please go ahead.
How are we doing today?
Oh, doing pretty good. I don't know if I'm going to be able to give you any scoops, but...
Yeah, you can. I'm sure you can. Dig deeper. Who's got the mount? Is Foray Giroux in the irons on him?
Yes. Giroux will ride him again.
What's your thoughts on him? He's been pretty hot here lately. What do you think about that boy?
Yeah, he's one of the hottest riders in the country. I think he's been hovering around... probably in the top five money winners, top five by races won nationally of jockeys. So looks like he'll win the riding title at Fairgrounds. I think he's a great up-and-coming rider.
What's your thoughts on having a victory already at Churchill Downs? Does that give you any kind of advantage? And I know Steve is pretty good at Churchill Downs, too. Do you think that gives you guys any kind of advantage?
Maybe a slight advantage. It's always nice to know that your horse gets over that surface well. He's going to probably be stabled there for a significant part of the late spring and early summer. So, yeah, I'm glad that he's got a win over that surface.
And what do you like most about Gunrunner? What do you think is his most attractive quality right now?
I think his most attractive quality is that he seems to be getting better and maturing. And as I mentioned before, he's very, you know, very tractable. He doesn't really get excited about anything. You can put him in between horses or on the fence, or, you know, you can make a move with him and then slow him down a little bit. I won't say he's push button because I've never ridden him, but, he does seem to have a lot of tactical advantages that some horses don't have.
And that's the scoop I was looking for. See, I knew you would have one. I appreciate it. That's the luck, okay?
All right. Thank you.
Ladies and gentlemen, as a reminder, if you would like to ask a question, please press *1 on your touchtone phone. Please press *1 if you'd like to ask a question. There are no further questions at this time. Please continue.
All right. Thanks, David. I've got a couple more for you here. Maybe you can give us the scoop on Adore. This is a big brown filly who very impressively beat winners at Oaklawn last time. What can you tell us about her coming into the Fairgrounds Oaks?
Again, she's, maturing at the right time. She seems to be good. She goes around two turns. As I recall, she's not going to be three until the middle of May. So we thought that she'd earned a chance to go earn herself some black type.
Very good, very good. And you know, interestingly, she also had a bullet work two works back, and we've talked about this before with regards to Steve, but, you know, he's not the type of trainer to push his horses for a bullet. If you see that, what does that tell you about the horse? about that particular work?
That they're very fast. Like
right.
you say, he never really asked them to go fast. I'm not sure I've ever seen one of his exercise riders draw a stick. Ordinarily, his horses, you know, whatever they do, they kind of do it on their own. So, you know, I think those two bullet works were pretty significant, especially coming off of, you know, Gunrunner coming off of the win of the Risen Star and Adore coming off of the allowance win at Oaklawn.
Excellent. Well, before we let you go, we should also get an update on Untappable and how she came out of the Azari and now going forward to the Apple Blossom.
Came out of the Azari perfect. You know, not a hair out of place. You know, I wish we could have won that race. On paper, it looked like, you know, she probably should have. However, it had been a long time since she'd run. And she's, you know, good horses like her are, they're just kind of tough to get fit. They're so biomechanically efficient that to give them enough work in the morning is really difficult. So you almost have to give them a race or two to get them completely fit.
And can you talk about how it's basically a mirror image of last year? I mean, you would have said that she probably, on paper, would have looked like the winner in the Azari last year, and look what happened in the Apple Blossom.
Yeah. Well, after the race on Saturday, I was talking to Steve, and I told him, you know, I've seen that race before. It's one that she has in her repertoire where she kind of goes out and she is a little hard to handle and can get a little rank, and it tends to cost her a little something late. But you know, it's a new year and it's a long time to the Breeders' Cup, which is the ultimate goal. So we're moving in the right direction.
Very good. Well, David, thank you for all the great information, and best of luck at Fairgrounds on Saturday.
Well, thanks, Jim.
All right. That's David Fisk, the racing manager for Windchill Thoroughbreds. I want to thank all of our guests today, not just David, but also Tom Amos and Art Sherman. Really enjoyed talking to all three of these gentlemen. For any of you that are looking for this audio for your stories, it'll be up on NTRA.com later today, and there'll also be a transcript posted tomorrow, so you have both of those at your disposal. Thanks again to everybody for joining us on the call. As always, throughout the Triple Crown season, you can contact myself or Joan Lawrence if there's anything we can do to help you with your stories. Now I'll send it back to our operator, Nick, to wrap it up.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, this concludes today's call. Thank you for your participation. You may now disconnect.